Hi, and welcome to The Foxhole, a show that brings you insights into hot topics, lifestyle design tips, and tactics for success.
Okay, so it's another crazy week in social media. Actually, you know, what's something that we didn't even talk about yet either is that Zuckerberg's testifying with the European Union today, or like earlier today. They basically had their same kind of horse and pony show that the United States Congress did to try and get him to come out and testify about things. I don't think he said anything new, though. I mean, I only saw a couple reports out of it, but no new answers and no... I guess they're still going to be in business. Facebook's still going to be a thing going forward.
I would presume he gave them a lot of the same vague answers he gave the U.S.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like it was a lot less information dense than the U.S. version of it was. But it's interesting because, you know, the whole... On the back of the Cambridge Analytica thing, the debate in the United States around regulating big technology companies and has been raging and gone almost, it's gone as far as calling to have these companies broken up because of their monopoly status. And so much of the Facebook messaging is around, oh, it's not really a monopoly. And yeah, we have competitors. I think he said today, Mark said today, he's like, well, when I wake up every day or for where I'm sitting on the table, it feels like there are new competitors every day. And so they're trying to really downplay the monopoly power that Facebook has. But it's like, if you asked Snapchat right now how they feel about Facebook's monopoly power, they probably have a bit of a different story. But, you know, this whole conversation around breaking up big tech or implementing regulation is super interesting. And I think that it probably has to happen at this point. It's pretty clear that these companies have a massive amount of influence over how people think about the information that gets out there. Obviously, they have so much information about privacy and deeply intimate details about like who you are and your psychological makeup. And they don't seem to take that responsibility extremely seriously, or at least it's not on the top of their priority list. In the wake of all this like Cambridge Analytica stuff, these companies are definitely starting to ramp up the optics on their concerns about privacy. I don't know if you've gotten 2,000 emails from every service you've ever used on the internet about updating. Everybody's updating their privacy policies. And so it's now like the really important item, it seems, that people are focusing on is privacy and tech and all this stuff. But the history has shown us that these companies are not capable of self-regulating and getting outcome and getting outcomes that are consistent with, I would even say, American values or what common sense sort of privacy laws and stuff would lead you to sort of like what your expectations be when using these services. So regulation is definitely inevitable. And the debate now is shifting toward what does that even look like? There's this coalition of progressive groups on the left that are starting this huge ad campaign to pressure the FTC to do three things. They want Instagram, WhatsApp, and Messenger to be broken off. Like they want to break up Facebook into separate companies for Instagram, WhatsApp, and Messenger, and then Facebook, the actual product. They want to implement strong privacy rules, and then they want to make it possible for users on competing social networks to compete with one another. So these are really interesting points. I think breaking up Facebook is the most extreme of these things. I think that implementing strong privacy rules is a no-brainer, and it's something that every person should be concerned with and care about. I think making it possible for users on competing social networks to communicate with one another is a bit of a pipe dream.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, presumably it would mean that it should be easy for you to open up Snapchat and see contacts both on like Snapchat's network and the Facebook network in your Snap list. or whatever, like your friends list, like the idea that it should be really easy to just jump into another social network and bring your friend graph and data and photos and content and media and all that stuff with you.
In order to do that, would those companies have to work together in order to create that?
Yeah, and this is why it's so unlikely. And it's not even a really good idea, because implementing a way for like interoperability between different, so I guess you could call them social services, technology social services, would require that standards emerge. So some kind of standards body would have to be put together in order to define what the data looks like, how it moves around, and all these standards by which it should all work. And then all these companies would have to program into their own infrastructure and their own apps those standards. And the web itself has for a long time been regulated by a standards body called W3C. Yeah, the World Wide Web Consortium, W3C. Actually founded by Tim Berners-Lee, who's the guy who invented the internet. But basically, this is like a standards body that defines HTML formats and all the languages that you use to build web pages. They're all defined by this standards body. And this is what makes it possible for Chrome and Internet Explorer and Firefox and all these different web browsers to load the internet and display web pages, and for that experience to look more or less consistent across all those browsers. Well, that happens because there's this standards body that has said, this is how HTML code should work. These are the tags that you can use, and this is what it should all look like, and this is how it should look in the browser when you put this code in here. So conceivably, like, you could have a similar standards body that regulates social media and data and stuff like that. But the problem is that the trade-off in having a sort of standards body like this is that it reduces the rate of innovation. It means that everybody is kind of using the same features and has access to the same stuff, and it's whatever is made available through the standards body. And vendors themselves always want to be pushing the limits. So what you wind up having is like Internet Explorer, for instance, certain features only available on Internet Explorer, and they're non-standard, right? They're not approved by the standards body. And it gets tricky really quickly. But it should be a thing. It should be easy to move your data around. It should be easy to making it so that you can sort of like interact with other members of a social network seems kind of like a like I said, a pipe dream, where like I guess what they mean by that is the idea that, you know, if I was using Snapchat, I could start chatting with somebody on Facebook Messenger. I think that's sort of the spirit of what they're suggesting here, but I don't think that that makes a lot of sense. I do think it makes sense to make it as easy as possible for your identity and media and social graph to be basically decentralized. And this is, I know that I make fun of cryptocurrency a lot and kind of harp on the crypto movement, but the fact is, I think if there's going to be any real meaningful, lasting, fundamental disruption to centralized social services, and when I say centralized, I mean like they are gatekeepers who own your social graph and your data and your photos and all of this stuff, I don't think the antidote to that is going to be government regulation of the existing companies. I think it's going to come from probably crypto, like a crypto company that does a decentralized identity layer for the internet.
So one of the three items that they're asking the FTC to do is to break off Instagram, WhatsApp, and Messenger into their own companies separate from Facebook proper. Giving this some thought as a business owner, even if they were all completely independent companies, that really doesn't stop them from sharing information with each other. So what do you think their impact is they're trying to achieve by asking them to do that?
Well, I assume that breaking them up into independent companies wouldn't just be a sort of surface layer, symbolic, like optical gesture. I'm sure that there would be deep like rules about that, especially where it comes to sharing data and that sort of thing. But I don't know antitrust law well enough to speculate on it. I would assume, though, that part of breaking them up would be creating sort of firewalls between them where it comes to data sharing, especially for the rest of the market. It wouldn't, in other words, it wouldn't be surprising to me that part of that breakup would be something like any data exchange that can occur between, say, Instagram and Facebook should be made available to any third party so that they couldn't do what they're doing right now. I mean, because right now, Instagram is built on Facebook's ad or Facebook's infrastructure. Instagram ads are all built with Facebook's. They're built on top of Facebook's ad exchange. So you don't buy advertising on Instagram. You buy advertising for Instagram through Facebook. So decoupling them would really be if decoupling those companies and actually firewalling them from one another was actually possible and realistic and practical, that would be an amazing outcome, I think, for the future of the web and just the competition in the marketplace.
But when you say decoupling them, you don't just mean separating them as it states here. You mean actually making any of that information available to everyone else that would be available to each other.
Well, I'm talking about breaking them up in the way that the article and I think that this group is pushing for, which is to separate them completely. Independent intellectual property on each company. They're not using the same ad exchanges, user accounts. Every bit of data would be siloed between those three companies or four companies or whatever it turned out to
be. Right, but you're saying they wouldn't have the ability or they wouldn't be able to just share independent or not, right? You can have two independent companies, but you can still share information with each other. You're saying that information would also be shared publicly.
There would have to be, I don't know if that would necessarily be like the sort of statute or like the clause about it, but there would have to be something built into that breakup agreement that would prevent them from operating like a cartel or whatever you would call that, even as a broken up entity. Like it wouldn't be enough just to say, okay, now you're three different companies. They would have to go as far as to say, like, here's how data exchange can work between the companies and all of that stuff. And so the devil would probably be in the details on how that all comes together and breaks out. But these sorts of antitrust agreements are pretty common. I mean, an example of a provision that happened in antitrust stuff is when Ticketmaster and Live Nation merged. There were huge antitrust concerns over that because you've got the biggest ticketing company in the world meets the biggest live event promotion company in the world, and now they're together, and so it's like they could have extreme monopoly control over the market. And so part of a sort of antitrust settlement that occurred when those guys were taken to task for that was that 20% of every show that is sold through Live Nation and Ticketmaster needs to be allocated for what's called fan club ticketing. And without getting like too lost in the weeds on this, it basically means that the band itself can sell those tickets to whomever they want. It's not done through Live Nation. It's not done through Ticketmaster. And so if the band wants to attach fees to it or sell the tickets for different prices or all kinds of different things, they're allowed to do that. And they're supposed to be given up to a 20% allocation of every show. And so that's an example of a sort of antitrust sort of compromise that can get built into these things.
But that doesn't actually happen, right?
In practice, it's totally mobbed up and you don't really get those allocations. It's a really difficult thing to get those allocations. But it's built in. So that's why it's kind of like that's why I say the devil is really in the details of how this stuff is implemented and what the rules actually are. But I think that overall it would be really healthy for there not to basically be an advertising duopoly in the United States. It's just like all of the online ad dollars basically go to Google and Facebook. Which is, if you want that to be what there is for the next 2, 3, 4 decades and really nothing else, then, we should keep on going on the way we are. But I think if we want to encourage competition in the marketplace and give promising companies the room they need to sort of grow and flourish and compete, something has to be done here.
So if you haven't seen these ads yet, the tranche of digital ads that began yesterday by this coalition include messages like Mark Zuckerberg has a scary amount of power. We need to take it back. You know, if they're just wanting the FTC to do these things, are they hoping that, I guess it seems like they're hoping like all of these ads are going to force the public to then push for the regulation to happen?
Yeah, it's probably about building public awareness of these issues. That's the other component of this is, you know, I really wonder how much people care. I mean, it blew my mind to read that studies were showing that Facebook usage had increased after all of the Cambridge Analytica controversy broke.
Yeah, that blows my mind too, because that makes me want to spend even less time on there.
I guess people just don't really care. I mean, I think the truth is most people aren't super concerned about privacy because most people don't have like something terrible to hide, or not doing things on Facebook or these places.
Do you
that
think they don't care,
or
do you think they don't understand?
I think they just don't care. It's not, I don't think it's hard to understand. But you know, the other flip side to this thing too is that really honestly, like what Facebook does isn't, they're not selling your data to advertisers. They do a lot of creepy stuff. Like Facebook itself has I would agree, a scary amount of power in the form of information about everybody. And the thing is, too, it's like you don't even have to use Facebook for them. They have an extensive profile about your whereabouts, your preferences, your everything, whether you use it or not, because they build up a composite profile of you based on the data your friends have on you, which when you start to dig into it and understand the various ways they can collect on this and build these profiles, it's like they can build really, really, really comprehensive psychological profiles and like logistical profiles. Like they know like where you are. They can track you. They can see who you're around. It's crazy. So people should care. It's the capability has always been there to do this stuff, but it's become so much more personal with the advent of cell phones because they follow you everywhere. And in the beginning of this, I mean, I don't know if you remember this, but in 2007, 2008, for a long time, there wasn't even a lock code on iPhones.
I think I was still using my BlackBerry back then.
The idea of mobile privacy, like the idea of privacy wasn't even obvious enough to anybody back then as to include like a default, like lock the phone thing. And so it's become a major, but it's crazy because, and especially the earlier versions of these operating systems before they had really figured out how badly these features would be abused. But I mean, if you think about it, you've got a little computer in your pocket that's got a GPS. It's always recording your location. Even if you turn off location access on your phone, if you're using internet services, we are able to track your location to within, I don't know, probably less than a mile.
Yeah.
Just based on like your IP address and stuff. And so it's like this, the ability to track you and to really understand, and with Facebook's reach, because they have such a huge installed base on third party websites, like they're able to track and monitor you on third party websites because of their infrastructure and what
are
they've been able to accomplish.
Are you referring to the sites where you log in with your Facebook?
Well, even sites that just have like a share on Facebook button, like one of those, like those social links that you find on articles everywhere where it's like,
they're able to track those, you via that.
Yep.
Wow. If you have location services turned on either your internet or for that particular.
No, straight up, even without location services on, they can track you through those things.
So let me just get this straight. If I have an internet page open and I'm on a website that at the bottom of the website, it says share this link. And there's like a Facebook thing there.
Yeah.
How are they able to know my location?
Because it's loading those plugins from Facebook's servers in a lot of cases. And if it's not loading those plugins directly from Facebook servers, those plugins are communicating with Facebook's servers from your browser. Oh, wow. And you are an IP address. All of that happens in the same way that when you place a phone call and you talk to somebody, that's happening over like a phone number. Everything you do on the internet when you're loading pages or apps or anything happens over the computer equivalent of a phone number, which is called an IP address. And using an IP address, you can look up anybody's location.
And so it's via the IP, not via I have location services turned on.
It's via the IP. And when you have location services turned on, that's using the phone's GPS, and it's communicating like exact GPS coordinates to the app itself, which might be a website. But yeah, I mean, just using an IP address, we can track your location. And if you don't want your location to be tracked using an IP, you can use a VPN. And a VPN would allow you to kind of like mask your both your actual IP address and your location. Getting back out of the weeds here, privacy good, Facebook bad. But oh yeah, bringing it all the way back, really what Facebook does, though, isn't even really that bad, because a lot of the narrative in the media is like Facebook selling your data to advertisers. That's the thing you always hear about Facebook and Google, is that they're like they're evil because they collect your data and they sell it to advertisers. But they're not really, they're not selling your private data to anybody. I mean, within these organizations, they certainly have access to these profiles. And in some cases, people can access those, like they have ways for folks to access your personal information if they really need to. But even then, it tends to be extremely locked down. Like I've talked to executives at Google, that describe, you know, because I'll joke with them about like, oh man, I hope you guys can't see my search history or whatever. And almost always it's like, oh, there's no way that we could even do that. It's inconceivable that we could even access that. So there tends to be strong data protection within the companies, and what they're not selling like your Michael Boyle, here's your advertising profile, and they don't sell that to Airbnb. What they sell is exposure to people based on your attributes that derive from that data, and it's basically anonymized. So an advertiser doesn't see like show an ad to Mike Boyle. What an advertiser is able to do is say show an ad to 30 somethings that live in Santa Monica, like 30 something males that live in Santa Monica, and then I would see that because I fit into that category. So there are all kinds of different ways to look at this. But I think that the main problem is less about data privacy and more about competition in the marketplace.
Well, we have, I'm sure there's a lot more to come with what's going to happen with the FTC, with the government, with regulations around all this. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
Oh, man, hopefully, though, it doesn't turn into one of those things, you know, where how you described with the ticketing companies, you know, something gets put into place and the details were not as... They don't always accomplish their goal with the details.
And oftentimes it like has the like a unintended side effects. And that's the other thing about this regulation situation, too, is that the more heavily regulated social firms become, the more difficult it's going to be for startups to get up and going, which is why Mark's like totally pro regulation, because if the government starts regulating Facebook and regulating social media, it's going to entrench their position and make it more difficult to start up, which is the opposite of what we want.
That will be a very sad time if that happens for innovation. Let's talk about Snapchat and arguably one of Facebook's larger competitors and what's happening with them right now. Just for a little bit of context, too, you know, we talked about this actually, I think, on like episode 8, the controversial redesign that they came out with.
Yeah.
That was back in March. And now they have a redesign of the redesign.
All of this is rooted in Facebook setting up Instagram as a head-on. I mean, basically, it's a sort of existential battle between Instagram and Snapchat. For years and years, Facebook tried to compete with Snapchat by, first they tried to acquire them, and their offer was rebuked. Then they tried to launch a Snapchat clone, I think called Poke. And they've had various attempts at cloning Snapchat that failed like over and over again until they finally implemented the stories format in Instagram. And that kind of was a really big game changer. I think that was toward the end of 2017, maybe the middle or end of 2017. Or I want to say, actually, no, it was like right around when Snap went public, I feel like, which was just so savage. But they copied this format and it took a lot of the wind out of the sails of Snapchat apps growth. And really created this situation where the pressure was on for those guys to now show performance, because Snap had also just recently gone public, which is tough because now, you know, it's one thing when you're a private company, that's a sort of, you've got these sort of unicorn expectations and a certain amount of leeway, or you're able to do things kind of without as much scrutiny. But then they went public, and now they have all of this pressure in order to like satisfy Wall Street and everybody, and write fast, because it really matters that they have like a single news story has had the ability to cut their stock in half. So they're very vulnerable to negative press and stuff like that. And so when Instagram copied stories, Snapchat's growth started to stall. There's tons of negative press around all of this, and so it created a lot of pressure for Snapchat to respond in a way that was going to increase their growth and engagement. And so The Information, which is a subscription-only tech news publication that's really good, reported on how the redesign kind of came together, the original idea for redesigning the app came together. And leading up to this, it was clear to those guys that they needed to have some kind of response. And one of the greatest criticisms of the Snapchat app is that it's difficult to use for like olds, I guess, because young people kind of like that it's difficult to use. They kind of like discovering things and sharing with one another, like teaching each other how to use it and all of this stuff. But for the wider market, they needed to make a much more usable app. And so I think that pressure from Instagram put in their heads that we need to redesign the app to make it easier to use. And then I guess Evan Spiegel, who's the CEO of Snapchat, was in China and was inspired by the social products that are flourishing there, which look very different than American products and have a very different level of integration into Chinese culture. And having been inspired by how those apps are set up and work, I guess on their flight back, Evan decided that he wanted to redesign the app according to whatever his new vision was. And he had his designer with him on the flight, and they kind of hashed out what the redesign was going to be. The flaw that they saw in the Instagram experience or in the existing social media sites is that branded content, either from product brands or celebrity content, so-called influencers, just dominated your experience. When you open up Instagram and start scrolling around, you're just seeing so much content from influencers and brands. You don't see a lot of personal content from your friends, family, and the people that you're close to. And they identified that as a major hole in the Instagram experience. And so the inspiration behind the Snapchat redesign was, okay, we're going to separate your personal interactions, friends, family, chat, that kind of thing, from brand and celebrity content. And so they moved all the personal stuff off to the left side of the camera in the app, and they put all of the brand and celebrity stuff off to the right side of the camera. And that was really the fundamental change. I mean, the app itself, like, it looks a little different, but it wasn't dramatically changed. I think that the blowback on it was over the top, like to the point where the conspiracy theorist in me thinks that part of the campaign, part of like this crazy news coverage and all the craziness happening around the negative pushback, I think the flames were like fanned in some way by Facebook PR.
Oh yeah, for
sure.
Or
somebody operating on those interests. You know, like there's this guy that his name's Josh Constein. He writes for TechCrunch. And he's such a shill for Facebook. Every article, like, it makes me so angry to read every article this guy writes about Snapchat, because they're all like, you take the worst possible view on whatever the events are and then use language that's like super condescending and super anti-Snap. It's like, it's basically like Zero Hedge and Tesla. Like I had to stop following Zero Hedge on Twitter because it's the anti-Tesla stuff is it's too much. It's over the top and it's obnoxious. It's egregious. And anyway, this guy Josh Constein is kind of that way with TechCrunch and his coverage of Snap. Mm-hmm. Like they just can't, you know, it's terrible. But that guy is so clearly on like Facebook's payroll. Like he's like basically Facebook's embedded journalist at TechCrunch. Yeah. And so his articles get tons of play. And then like whenever there's like some celebrity says something bad about Snapchat, that gets like lit up everywhere. It's like Facebook trending.
Does that mean you're going to stop Snapchat sucks. TechCrunch?
I don't follow TechCrunch.
How do you know about this guy then?
Because I see his articles.
Where?
Because Facebook's probably on Twitter. Like people tweeting them or linking to them or, you know, just otherwise it popping up in my feed one way or another. And anyway, but again, like that's... Yeah, but it's so, if that's true, and I'm sure that on some level it is, that on Facebook's campus somewhere, they're like, okay, how do we initiate a sort of anti-Snapchat press strategy? Like, they're gangster with it. They are just, like, murdering
so
those guys. Snapchat, like, Zucker, like, just don't, like, they're, like, between, when I think of CEOs I would never want to tussle with in the business landscape, it's like Bezos and Zuckerberg are probably at the top of that list. And Zuckerberg, like the thing about Zuckerberg too, is he has no shame or whatever. Like they were totally shameless about stealing stories. And I feel like there's always stuff like that. They always just take the best stuff from whatever's going on out there and they just integrate it into their own thing and they're totally shameless about it. And then they're like, look at our crazy numbers. Look at this. Because whatever they do, whenever they activate a new feature, they just instantly throw billions of people at it. Like they recently at F8 announced that Facebook is getting into the dating game. Like they're building online dating into Facebook itself, which I think is brilliant. But it like immediately crushed Match, the company that owns Match.com's stock. If they really want to, if Facebook really wants to, they'll probably just murderize not just Match, but like Tinder and Bumble and all those guys. Like it's a death knell. As soon as you hear that one of those companies is getting into your line of work, it's just get out of it, you know, sell or whatever. I don't know. It's tough to say. I don't think it looks good for Snapchat. I think that because another problem is that Facebook has really pushed the format of stories. Like you can share for instance, one thing you can do on Instagram stories that you can't do on Snapchat right now is if you're listening to a song on Spotify and you want to share that to your story, which is maybe one of the most common things I see is I'm watching stories on Instagram. Like I see screenshots of either a Spotify music player or Apple music player. Like people take screenshots of the album they're listening to and post it to their story. And you can now share from Spotify, you can share like an album sticker basically into your Instagram story, which then allows people who are watching your Instagram story to tap on that song and start listening to it in Spotify. And so they're doing little things like this. They've even opened up an API for third-party services to publish into stories, which is crazy. It's very useful and it's a huge step forward for that format. But again, it's not something that Snapchat's doing. So those guys are, I don't know. I think that some of the best product people in the world right now are working at Snapchat. I think Evan's a really talented CEO. Some of the negative interpretations of this redesign thing are that like, oh, you know, he kind of just forced it through like the CEO, because Evan and Bobby Murphy, his co-founder, have a controlling voting interest in the company. Basically, nobody can override their decisions at all. And so if Evan wanted to redesign the app, which he did, and wanted to set like a 3-week deadline, which he did, and wanted to proceed regardless of what early testing and what his lieutenants told him to do, which he did, he's allowed to do that. This one didn't go so well for him, but maybe others will. I think that what I've heard is that their messaging business is really, really, really strong. Like the when you use Snapchat to chat with your friends or to send snaps to friends, that sort of interpersonal chatting has ridiculous engagement, an engagement that even Facebook Messenger wishes that they could be achieving with that format. But everything else is kind of hurting. And the thing about messengers is that it's so difficult to monetize that. Like how do you monetize chat, right? Like you don't. All the ad dollars are going to go to the sort of stories format, basically. And people aren't going to, if the Snapchat ad results are not exceptionally better than Facebook's, then those guys lose that war. So I'm hoping that they're working on a hardware product. I'm hoping they're working on some different thing that's like not, that's like the next big thing, basically, is what they need to be releasing in order to stay relevant. Yeah.
Something that maybe Facebook cannot copy.
I mean, yeah, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, definitely. But again, that comes down to the thing where it's like they're so ruthless about competition that like what is there that you can't really copy?
Thanks for tuning in. For more information, head over to foxhole.fm. That's foxhole.fm. If you have any questions, please email us at feedback@foxhole.fm. And if you're enjoying what you hear, please leave us a great review on your favorite podcast platform or iTunes. Thanks again for listening.